So, can you hear me in the back?
Yes.
Okay. So, this talk is on community housing and the opinion preview of Frank's talk. In short, data hiding is a task that we allow retrieval of data under certain circumstances, under certain specific way of collaboration between the parties. So, by the way, if I start to speak too fast or there's symbols and things that doesn't make sense on the screen, just let me know. And for other questions, you can also ask on the spot. So this is the one that this talk is going to be based on. Quantum data hiding. You can use quantum state to hide classical or quantum data. You can consider hiding states in two-party states or multi-party states. And these are the ones that I remember having appeared on the archive so far. This talk will be based mostly on the earliest example because it's simplest, and the latest one because it's a little more complete. This is an outline of the talk. I'll give some motivation of why we propose such a task. It's somewhat weird, and I'll define the rules of the game. Then I will talk about the simplest example, hiding one classical bit in two parties using quantum states, and some generalization of this simplest example. Then I'll discuss some general features of quantum data hiding that holds for all schemes. And finally, I hope I have time to describe this new method that allows hiding many qubits all together in any number of parties. And then hope I have time for more comments on some open problems and general features that we have found. We can think about quantum data hiding as coming from two different subjects. One is secret sharing, the other one is non-locality without entanglement. In secret sharing, we can think about hiding quantum or classical data again. And the idea is that we want to consider subsets of parties and define whether they can or cannot retrieve the data. So there are two rules. Either the security rule says that certain unauthorized sets of parties should not be able to access the data or have very little access to allow a little flexibility. And the other condition, the correctness condition, is to say that authorized party should be able to retrieve the data. Now, what do we, like, how we define when we think it is unauthorized and when it is authorized? So the model here is to assume that we don't know which party may be dishonest, but we assume that the majority of them should be honest. So we would be tended to believe that when too few parties get together and try to open up the secret illegally, they would not be able to do that. So usually the unauthorized ones are those that have too few parties. And the authorized ones are those that have enough number of parties, so enough authority in some sense. So one real life example is that, say, you can have a joint account with someone else and both have to show up in order to withdraw money. Is it clear? So far. Now, from a very different direction, about studying quantum correlation, we can think about, we have this other scenario, this phenomena in which we call non-locality without entanglement, in which a set of product states that's globally distinguishable, is over two parties, that turns out to be indistinguishable. In a sense, it cannot be perfectly distinguishable, where the two parties can only perform LOCC, standing for local operation and causal communication, for the rest of this talk. So if we want to rephrase this phenomena as a cryptographic protocol, we would say that the security condition here is that the two parties together with LOCC still have incomplete access to the data, while the correctness condition is that if the two parties are together, meaning that they can perform joint quantum operation, they have quantum communication, or since they have LOCC, we may as well think that they have entanglement, then they can retrieve the data. So this is the notion of non-locality without entanglement. And quantum data hiding initially was just motivated in an attempt to make the security condition more stringent. So basically, we just looked at a bipartite system in which when the two parties get together and perform LOCC, they still have very, very little access to data. The previous example, the example for non-locality without entanglement, is such that the two parties have not been complete access to data, but actually they have a lot of access in some sense. They just cannot perfectly distinguish the space. So here we want to have much higher security. But initially, we cannot find unentangled state for doing the job, so we drop the notion of without entanglement. We allow entangled state to be encoded. So this is the initial proposal. But since we have proposed this, we may as well make it look more general, so we can consider hiding quantum or possible data among any parties. And we want to make it look a little like secret sharing also. So we consider instead of successor party that may or may not be able to open up the secret, we consider partitioning these N parties into subsets. So that parties within one subset can perform joint operations, and across subsets they can only perform LOCC. So this is the thing they can and cannot do. And the security condition will then be rephrased as the fact that some partitions will not be able to, under some partition of these parties, they will not be able to retrieve the data. And following the idea we have for secret sharing, we would think that when the parties are too scattered, when too few of them are actually quantumly together, say only two are together, then they will not be able to recover the data. And in fact, they will be able to learn further about the data. I'll make that mention a little more formal later. And when more of them are actually together, like say four of them, then they can, with the help of the others, be able to retrieve the data. The help of the others can only come from causal communication. So is the concept somewhat clear in the multi-party setting? So now, let me more formally define the task so that it will be unambiguous throughout the rest of the talk. A quantum data hiding scheme is a way to encode quantum or classical state. I mean, classical state is one special case of quantum state, so we don't need to say it specially. So it's one way to encode quantum state. So these symbols, like rho and sigma, will represent density matrices throughout the talk. So it's an encoding of these density matrices to some other density matrices. So this encoding map is a completely positive trace-preserving linear map taking density matrices to density matrices. So it is a set of this encoding map. It's an encoding map such that it will satisfy the security and the correctness condition. Now the security condition, we say something like have very little access, what do we mean? So this is the definition. It says that given some unauthorized partition of the parties into subsets, for any two different data points, after we encode the data, any measurement, that's LOCC with respect to the unauthorized partition, applied to the encoded state, which means that the party have to measure out the data in an unauthorized manner. If they try to do that for everything they can do, the output distribution of the measurement will be very close to one another as measured by the trace distance. So epsilon is supposed to be small here as a security parameter. So in other words, if they try to illegally measure the data to learn something about the encoded state, the output distribution is fairly indistinguishable for different data that has been encoded. And it is in this sense we say the data is inaccessible. This expression is very ugly. Is it fine so far? Yeah, I apologize for that. I have no better way to write it. The correctness condition is more natural in a sense. Given a partition, any partition that's authorized. Now here, it's a funny situation because the other parties, that's not going to, there's only one copy, say in the quantum data case, there's only one copy of the quantum data. So one subset will be able to have possession of the quantum data at the end. So it involves saying that, well, for any authorized partition, then beforehand they have to agree which subset is going to have possession of the data. They can't both fight for that, like, so they have to agree on which one will have the data at the end. So, and for any sufficiently large subset that's supposed to have the data at the end, with this symbol A, then there will be, we want to find a decoding map that depends on A, of course. So that for all data, applying the decoding map to the encoded data will give a state, this state, that's close to the initial data, as measured by the trace distance again. So this data is something that looks like a correctness parameter here. So this is a formal way to write down when decoding is successful. Is it fair so far? Maybe it's a good time to pause for questions if there are any, but to clarify the presentation. Yes, Tracy?
Is there something about why you're using the trace
node
here?
Why I choose the trace node? Well, the security condition is obvious for the trace node criteria because it's a way to measure how distinguishable things are. So it's a natural measure for knowing how much the parties can learn. The trace distance also have good properties, such as it's a distance measure, unlike mutual information. Mutual information is a poor measure from my point of view. In the correctness condition, the trace distance will also give rise to some other measures related to some other measures like fidelity. So it seems to be a fair condition. But thanks for making that point, because the norm we use actually make a big difference sometimes. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, then we can move on to a much simpler example.
I still have a question. In the secret sharing, the quality of the scheme is characterized by fidelity. So just following on what Joe said, mm-hmm. So you're using the trace norm and I'm used to fidelity.
Mm-hmm. They're related by a quadratic. Like the error is just related by a quadratic. So it's not a big one. As long as there's no dimension factoring in. Say the one norm and the two norm, when you actually bring in a factor of, say, the dimension, then we run into trouble, but we don't have this at all. So that's why it's actually not a big issue for the correctness condition.
Right, so you're saying it's equivalent.
Yeah, for all relevant situations. So.
Mm-hmm. In the security condition, L is an LOCC measurement, yes. And so the difference is between the probability distributions between the measurement or between
It's the difference, it's the trace distance between the output distribution, the distribution of the measurement outcomes.
But why are you not interested in the distance between the probability distribution of the outputs, the results? That is,
I think this is, why am I interested in it?
Well, I think it's a natural thing can be to say to states that are not distinguishable if they give the probability distribution of outcomes which are close together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And this is very
it's
interesting.
The same,
This is actually the measurement distribution. We do have to talk about the measurement distribution because the states are actually different.
So that's the same to ask that the output states of the measurements are not close together.
Yes, yes. It's a custom state, so you can think about
it. Use the first version?
Yes. Yeah. But we do have to force that as a measurement. We cannot talk about operations because the identity operation will give us very poor. They are very distinguishable when we think about the identity operation, which is clearly LOCC. So we can move on to the simplest example, which is much easier than what we just saw. In the two-party case, there's only one reasonable SS structure, is to say that when the two parties can only do LOCC, it shouldn't be authorized. And when they're quantumly together, they are authorized. So that simplifies things a little bit. And the other simplification is that when we consider having one causal bit only, then there are only two encoder states, the zero encoder state and the one encoder state. I mean, just call it the zero and the one states from now on. The security condition becomes very simple is to say that, well, all LCC measurement across this part between the two parties should not be able to distinguish between the two states. And the correctness condition is just to say that there exists a joint measurement that can do a good job in decoding or in measuring whether it's a zero or a one state. So this is much simpler, so we can try to find some scheme that will satisfy this condition. You may wonder, isn't this something kind of easy to do, for example? Like, think about an unbound state. We know that we cannot distinguish a unbound state perfectly, because, or else we can get entanglement for free using LCC. So it seems like, well, it looks something easy to do. Why don't we just use a bound state to, and it has the correct property in some sense, is they all look measurably mixed locally. The problem here with bound state is that if you think about encoding, say, two bits in a bound state, then it actually, using LCC, the two parties can learn one out of the two bits that's encoded. For example, they can measure just in the computation basis and find the parity And then they will know whether they're sharing these two states or these two other states. So in other words, just using bare states, using bare state as an encoding state can have some problem. The twist turned out to be that, and you can also ask, is it because we're being greedy, we try to encode two bits in one bare state, how about encoding one bit? Then it takes some skill, in some sense, because we can, the two parties can always distinguish between two bare state from another two. So there's still some difficulties. Here, the trick turns out to be trying to distinguish between the singlet from the other three bare states. So let me explain the scheme first. The two parties will be sharing four bare states, k bare states, and they're all together four to the power k possibilities for doing so. And in the case when the data is zero, then it will be a random draw from k bare pairs that has an even number of singlets. And when we're trying to hide the data one, then it will be one random draw from the k-pair pairs that has an odd number of singlets. So some intuition to why this should work. Given one bell pair in some sense we cannot have an LCC measure that distinguish the singlet from the triplet perfectly, because then that would give a one quarter chance of creating a singlet out of nothing. But that will not give the kind of security we want. One will still be able to distinguish the singlet from the triplet with some probability. So to make the security higher, we just take the parity of these singlets in k pairs and try to improve the security condition. So this is the intuition behind this scheme. We can actually, is it clear what the scheme is? Like, what's the encoding map? No? So there are two ways you can think about these two states. One is a random mixture of all the k-bare pairs that has an odd or even number of singlets. So the cluster bit is hidden in the parity of the number of singlets in the k-bare pairs.
Sorry, so you hide one bit in k-pairs?
Yes.
You don't do k-bits?
Hide one bit in k-pairs. And we divide all possible bare pairs into two types, those with odd parity and those with even parity for the singlet. And then within those two types, then whether we are encoding a 0 or 1 would correspond to an equal mixture of all these states with the correct parity, or you can think about it as a random draw. Either one is fine, they're the same.
What's n? For the n?
Sorry, it should be k. Thank you for catching that. It's a cut and paste error.
And what's the LT?
That's just the name of the scheme. So, any other questions so far for what the scheme, like, is it clear what the encoding map is? So I'll try to show some reason why we know it is secure. But first, an obvious thing is that correctness is no problem here, because these two states are actually orthogonal globally. So if the two parties get together, they can always measure and find out whether it's a zero state or one state. So the only problem is to show this, the security. And in fact, the security is really good. It's exponentially decaying with the number of pairs. And why do we know this? The reason is because despite the fact that I described this state, these zero and one states, they're actually Brunner states. Brunner states are the state that has that's invariant when the two parties apply the same unitary on it. And because these states have so much symmetry, we can, without loss of generality, think that the measurement operators we're choosing here, we're optimizing the measurement operators for the chain parties, we can assume that these measurement operators that are also having the same symmetry. In other words, these measurement operators are proportional to Brunner states. And these are very simple and they are very well characterized, so we have much better handle of the optimization using this observation. And now we.
You mean for each copy of the letter set, or is you just acting on one copy or
no? It's the global name. So each U here is acting on 2 to the k dimensions. Thank you for asking. So we have restricted the measurement scheme we have to consider using symmetry. Now we use the locality constraint to restrict the measurements further. The idea is a very old one that a lot of you may be familiar with already. So let me say it once. Since this is an LCC measurement, the measurement operators have to look by separable states. If you know it, then you can skip the next one or two lines. But for those who haven't seen it, then I'll show you once. Oh, is this something obvious? Apparently not so. So imagine the two parties having these k-bar pairs, but they don't know what that is. And there exists a local LCC measurement that will output a 0 or 1. That hopefully will tell you something about the state. Then we can have this thought experiment in which they have this LCC measurement. But instead of inputting the state that encodes a 0 or 1, they locally prepare k-bar pairs, k for the first party and k for the second party. And then they both input half of these k-bar pairs. Now these k-bar pairs they prepare is known to them. They are all of the type 0, 0 plus 1, 1, k copies. And they stick in half of this into the measurement box for each of them. Is it clear what they're doing here with this thought experiment? Then, note that the whole procedure is LCC. These states are actually local, and this is the measurement is LCC. So the upper state corresponds to the post-measurement state that's left behind. Has to be separable, or else they will be able to prepare an untangled state using LCC. Which, because we also know another fact, that's an old fact, that the upper state, the post-measurement state, after measuring half of the maximum untangled state, will be proportional to the measurement operator itself. So using these facts together, we know that each measurement operator is actually separable. And together with the fact that the Werner state has been so heavily studied that the entanglement property is very well known. So we will be considering a larger cheating class that's PPD preserving. It's just larger than a separable set, so it cannot hurt to consider that class to allow more cheating strategy. And in that case, we just look for all the measurement operator that satisfy the PPD condition. And that has been well characterized. We just plug it all in here, look at all the possibility optimized. And it's actually tedious to find that this epsilon here is upper bounded by this expression. So this is how we know that it's secure. I'm hiding a lot of things under the rug, but this is the rough proof idea. Any questions about it?
Can you give us an intuition, maybe just by looking at the case where you have a case with one, a case with two? Mm-hmm. Is it easy to see why it's easier to distinguish the parity for case with two than for case with one?
It is not easy, but it just gives you, like, I think for one pair, you can distinguish it mm-hmm. really, like 0.5 something, like 0.7 or, like, it's a number. That's not too big, but not too small. So it's the important thing is that you cannot distinguish them very well, but you can distinguish them somewhat. So after we take k of these and look at only the parity, if you don't know either any one of the k pairs, then you have no information about the parity. So this is how we kind of take the, like, for each pair to distinguish one of them, you have some good chance of guessing correctly, but not perfect chance. So when you run the whole thing k times and try to learn the parity, it becomes difficult because the parity is sensitive on each bit. But this is not a correct argument on the other hand. It's a heuristic way to argue it, yeah. Because one need not restrict you to measure each of them and constantly add them together to get the parity. So this is why this argument is heuristic. Any other questions? Okay. Uh-huh.
What is the state of
Schrödinger? Terry told me just 2 days ago that this trick is due to has been written by Schrödinger back in 34. 35. Okay, thank you.
The trick, yeah.
So we're not yet to be celebrating the 70th anniversary of this amazing trick. We'll do that next year. So. Let's see some generalization to this scheme because it's rather limited, only possible bit and two parties. One thing you may ask is like, how about I have t bits instead of one? Can I use this scheme T-independent times between two parties, and how these tickets. This is subtlety, I will explain in the next slide. But in short, we can, but it comes at a price. The insecurity doesn't just add. So we actually need to use a little more bell pairs per bit hidden. But it's not a big price. So this is okay. The other generalization is how about multiple parties? As it turns out, Eglin and Brenda has a really nice, has a very nice study of this generalization. The main idea is that we can generalize the two-party Brenda state to the multi-party Brenda state, which is invariant when each party performs the same unitary transformation. So it's the state invariant under U tensor U tensor U tensor U, etc. for n of those, when you have n parties. So using some combination, so they studied these states and the geometry of it, and find that there will exist states that will achieve any kind of multi-party data hiding that has decent access structure. So what do we mean by decent? If a certain partition is authorized, and we glue the parties more together, give them more quantumness, then the less fine partition should also be able to open up the secret. So this is the only condition on data hiding that they find. We call it monotonicity. So they find that this is the only condition on quantum data hiding. And in fact, they can all be achieved using this class of states. So it's really nice. And more importantly, they also find that bipartite scheme, that's separable. It's something that we look for really hard, and without being able to prove that it's secure, but they really manage it. It's really nice. So there are two particularly nice reasons for having that scheme. First of all, it's an extreme case of non-locality without entanglement. These states are separable, but then you can learn almost nothing by using LLCC measurement. But then you can almost perfectly reconstruct the state. So that's the trick. It's not an exactly correct scheme. There's a little data there. At the same time, because these states are separable, so we have nice security feature that I'll explain a little later. So that's another generalization. And there's some discussion about generalizing it to quantum data, that the only written up work is in elaborate manner is due to these other three authors. That it's also very natural in a sense. We already have seen how to hide classical data. So one way to hide quantum data is to encrypt the quantum data using a classical key, and then hide the classical key. So this is what this other proposal is. So there are three generalizations to other regimes that we would like to do. And then some general features of data hiding. You notice that we have always been using mixed states. The reason is we actually do not use pure state quantum data hiding schemes because it has been shown. This is an old version of the slides. There's a quantum page number for this work. It's 0000798 by Walgate, Short, Hardy, and Vedrop. That shows that two orthogonal pure bipartite states can always be distinguished perfectly using LLCC. So if we have any data hiding scheme that uses pure state, then we can always identify a bipartite cut, identify, say, two almost orthogonal states, and break the security. So we can never use pure states for data hiding. The other feature is that we cannot have perfect security for quantum data hiding either, because we can, it's not that we can perform quantum state tomography that will allow the density matrices to be completely characterized, given enough number of copies of the state. And state tomography can be done by local measurement, followed by classical post-processing, which means that given many copies of state, the LLCC is sufficient to learn completely the density matrix. There's a jump to say that, well, if we have many copies, it gives full information. If we have one copy, it gives non-zero information. So it's not, again, it's not an argument, but it's an intuition why we cannot have imperfect security, and it has been proved that it cannot be done. However, as you have seen in the previous talk, you can think about quantum data hiding is one way to see a gap in computation power because of locality constraints. So if we add more locality constraints, we may be able to do better. One way to do it is to use local super selection rules on top of global ones. And frankly, Inazo has this scheme that uses pure states and is also perfectly hiding. So that shows the power of super selection rules. This is really nice. But for the rest of this talk, we will forget about super selection rules and go back to the usual quantum setting. The other issue is that I've alluded to briefly before, is when we try to use independent uses of a data hiding scheme, or even two different data hiding schemes, among, say, two parties for simplicity, and they have a certain number of these states that correspond to different uses of these data hiding schemes, then each party actually have more than one chunk of quantum data. And the LCC measurement we have to consider when we talk about security has to be on, say, all the state that the first party has in each of these schemes. So it is collective over different users of data hiding schemes, but LCC with respect to the two parties. This potentially can give more information than attacking each user of the scheme independently. And in fact, it is known that there are examples in other contexts in which this measurement that's collected for over different users of the scheme can be strictly more advantageous. So here we do not have a result that says, well, if we have different schemes, then the security parameter just add. We don't have that result, except for the case when the hiding states are separable. It has been proved by leaders. So this is one other feature of quantum data hiding schemes. And finally, one difference between quantum data hiding and us and secret sharing is that there's no cloning bound in the threshold. Because all parties help in the recovery, only one of them get a state at the end. Unlike secret sharing, there's some parties do not participate. So there's no bound on, in secret sharing, we cannot have parties that's fewer than half of the total number to reconstruct the quantum state, because the other half can do the same thing. And we end up with two copies of quantum data, that's disallowed. But in quantum data hiding, the other parties have to help classically. And therefore, there's no such no cloning bound. So, is everyone with me? any questions?
So I didn't quite understand why you're going to restrict you're hiding classical data.
This is general, sorry. Yeah. These 4 points are actually for general quantum data hiding.
Including hiding quantum data, or?
It includes hiding quantum data, but for classical data, then there's clearly no cloning bound. But in quantum secret sharing for quantum data, there is a known bound on the threshold that the number of parties who can reconstruct the data, if it is a symmetric scheme, that any set of parties, the probability of the success only depends on the number of guys in the subset. In those schemes, there's a known bound that no fewer than half can reconstruct the state because the other half can do the same for secret sharing. But we don't have a similar bound in data hiding. Or else it will be very confusing in the next part of the talk when I have threshold scheme that has any number of threshold.
So it's on the situation that we get to the
It is the fact that.
It's less than half the other half of your two.
Yes. Yes. But here, we don't divide the quantum data hiding. Everyone has to participate, so that really makes a big difference.
Can you read your comments on all this?
So you wonder why that is the case? Okay. You can think about these. So if there exists some super additivity here, for certain configurations, certain set of data, and certain for the data hiding scheme, then you can think about the two parties creating these other states using LCC. If these hiding states are separable, then they can create it themselves and use these other hiding states to help them open up the first guy and break the security requirements. So that's the brief idea about why separable state and non-separable state will make a difference. In a different way, you can think about it as, say, if these other hiding states are actually distillable, then the other two parties may distill entanglement from it and use entanglement to teleport the first guy over. So if you have been lost, it's time to catch up because now we move on to something new. just to recap what we have seen, we can think about the previous scheme as encoding 0 and 1 in a random mass state. And the first state, so this is the bipartite cut here between the two parties, and this ellipse is kind of their state space. And these dark states are kind of like a regular subset of states inside a big space. So how do we do something more general, like have any number of parties, high quantum states, like have more quantum state, for example? The idea is to, actually, we don't have any idea, so we just do something at random. that makes life easier, but not more practical, of course. So the idea is that we want to have a lot of quantum data in this case. We want to consider any number of parties n, and we want to consider a threshold scheme. Let me define what threshold schemes are. We say that a partition is authorized if the biggest subset has at least k parties, and it is unauthorized if it has at most k minus 1 parties. So this is a sense of threshold we check at that from secret share. And here, the encoding map is just that for quantum state living in an S-dimensional Hilbert space, you can think about first an inclusion of this Hilbert space into a d to the n dimensional Hilbert space, and then we do random unitaries. And here, the state, the encoding state, so each of these n parties will have local dimension d, and the encoder state, the e sub rho, will have d to the n dimensions. And this encoding map is just to say that we pick R of these unitaries according to the Hamiltonian, and we just pick any one of these at random and apply the unitary map. I don't think anything can be more generic than this. And the idea is to show whether this is secure or not, or under what circumstances this kind of mapping will be secure. So is it clear what the encoding map is? Yes? Okay, someone look at me when I say anything. So, let me iterate the numbers, these parameters once more, because there are too many of them. There are n parties, threshold is k. Each party has d dimensions, total d to the n dimensions. They try to hide an s-dimensional quantum state, and they try to do that by mixing up r random unitaries. Okay? And we will consider any n and k. We hope d will be large so that we can encode a lot of data, and in fact, the argument doesn't really work well without d being large. And we will find s and r so that this scheme will be a good data hiding scheme. So s and r and s will be announced a little later when we know what we need. And again, we want a security condition so that when the measurement is LCC with respect to some unauthorized partition, then they cannot learn much by making measurements. And when there's a partition, so to say, when there are enough number of parties together, then there exists a decoding operation so that the large subset will be able to decode the state with the help of the others. So let's see why this scheme will be is secure. It is a little involved. Huh?
I don't see what D to be large. Do you want S to be large? Is S to the size of the state that's being decoded?
We haven't shown what S is.
But are you requiring D to be large? That's the amount of local space that belongs to each of the parties.
You said the size of the data being large.
Yeah, that's one reason. We have to find out S, but we are saying that let's suppose each party needs D dimensions. And we find out how big S can be as a function of D. Then we can invert the dependence and say that given a quantum state of this size, how big D has to be in order for the scheme to work. Okay. So let's see why it's secure. It's a little involved, but I think it's the kind of technique that I want to advertise a little bit here. So when we say that the security means that for all LCC measurements, for all data points, they cannot be distinguished to appreciable extent using LCC measurement, then insecurity means the opposite. It means that there exists an LCC measurement and two data points so that measuring the encoded data will give you some information. Now, this condition will imply that at least one measurement operator will see a difference of the two encoded state, the E rho and the E sigma. And without lots of generality, we can think about this measurement operator as being rank one, because a fine measurement is always better. And I have done some mathematics here to renormalize it to trace one to get this condition here. And I have an extra factor here. That does not matter at the end. So, and note that this is a measurement operator for an LCC measurement with respect to an unauthorized partition. And since this is the LSC national, this national operator has to be a product over the partition. And if it's rank one and pure, so this is just a, it looks like a pure state over this partition. And now we can, it's a little complicated, so let's just focus on the expression in the middle. Am I too fast, or you want to stare at this thing a little bit?
Why did you divide by T2?
Again?
Why did you divide by T2?
Ah, because we have, it's a mathematical thing from this line that I need, because you have many measurement outcomes, so if each of them see a little difference, overall you have big trace distance. And here I jump from a whole measurement to just one measurement operator. So I have a loss of the.
So
it is a one POPM element normalized by its trace. That's why it is trace one, and we use that fact later. Done with this other jump before I remove them and look at the middle. So let's look at this expression. This guy is a rank one product state-like thing. And let's expand here, bro, using this expression. And we're looking at this thing for one term, there are two terms here. This is when we choose use of J at random. And we can think about pure state because when we think about mixed state in the Hilbert space, it's just a complex combination, so without loss, we can think about pure states in this hiding pure quantum data in this case. Is it clear why I can restrict the pure states? I can elaborate it. I'll stay a little time. If there exists mixed state rho and sigma, that can be distinguished. There must be some pure state component in the two of them. That can be distinguished. So I mean, as well just think about pure state, that makes things much easier. So it means that this thing is actually a random projector. And I'm looking at a fixed state here with a random projector, and I take the trace. The average, the expected value of this guy is a random variable that has expectation 1 over d to the n, because it's in d to the n dimensional system. And more importantly, this kind of inner product has a very special structure that it is very tightly concentrated. It means that it's very unlikely that it is far away from its average. Now, we sum r of this and take the average, which makes the whole thing close to 1 over d to the n even more. And in fact, we know this bound, that it's actually a famous theorem if you care what that is. The whole expression will be outside of 1 plus or minus a times epsilon over d to the n with a probability that exponentially decaying with r. And a is just a number that I stick in so that I don't need to redefine epsilon either. So it means that with overwhelming probability, this term is going to be 1 over d to the n, and not far from it. And similarly with this other term, with the sigma term, it's also going to be very close. And therefore the difference cannot be very big. So if I take the difference, the chance that it's going to be bigger than 2 times the deviation has to be upper bounded by either one of them violating this bound, and therefore we just take a 2 in front. For one particular choice of n, rho, and sigma. And it can be any, but it has to be fixed. Now the difficult part is to say that, well, we want it for all n and rho and sigma. This cannot occur. So this is the part that's a little tricky. Am I too fast? Do you want to stare?
Is that the probability for a single unit or a set of units?
A set of units, the all R of them. But it is for a single choice of n, rho, and sigma. And now I have to get rid of that dependence. So here we want to show that there exists no such thing that can, we want none of these to work. So we're actually asking the probability that there exists one that will show a large deviation. We want to bound that probability instead. What we can think about is that, first of all, we run into a problem because these are actually coming from a continuous space. But the fact is, this function is actually very slowly varying with respect to n and rho and sigma. So imagine if we find in the space of all the possible n, a very fine subset, so that every point in this continuous space is close to some net point. Then if there is a bad example of m and rho and sigma in the continuous space, then their closest neighbor in this net, the m tilde, rho tilde, and sigma tilde in this finite set, will also show some kind of deviation from expected behavior. It may be not as big a deviation, but it will show some deviation. So it is how we transit from a continuous space of things to worry about to just a finite number. And the important thing is to note that the number of net points we have to consider is dominated by this expression. That is exponential in d to the k minus 1. This is where the threshold kick in. And the rest is actually simple. We just apply the union bound to say that the probability that there exists one such choice, that the deviation is large, is no bigger than the number of points we have to worry about in this finite set times the probability that each of them will show a large deviation. So we take the product of these two guys, and this will give an upper bound on the probability that we do not have the security condition. Now, to show that there exists some random scheme that will give the security condition, we just need to find a value of r so that the product here is upper bounded by 1. If it is upper bounded by 1, it means that there exists some probability that the reverse is true, but we can do much better. Imagine if r is in the exponent here, and this guy is in the exponent. So if r is larger than this, the whole thing will, and it has a minus sign in the front here, so the whole thing will be much smaller than 1. So we will say that if r is larger than the constant times d to the k minus 1 times something big, say log b, with some other constant that's not very important, then the whole thing together will be exponentially decayed as a function of d to the k minus 1 times log b. And this will be teeny. And with overwhelming probability, the scheme is going to be secure for this choice of r. Well, I won't expect everything to be conveyed in such a short time. You can ask me after the talk. Let me just quickly finish with saying that in some sense this is intuitive, because we say that k minus 1 and this part together should learn nothing. So there should be at least k to the k minus 1 randomized operators to confuse them. So this is what this mind is quite intuitive. The other thing to note is that, well, how do we find S, as Joseph asked a while ago? The intuitive way to think about it is the correctness condition can be obtained, well, not really obtained, but the intuition behind the choice of S here is on the order B over log B with some parameter in the front. That's a constant. Is that each of these randomizing operator unitary will map the S dimensional Hilbert space into one of these blocks here. And if the total volume occupied by this block is much lower than d to the n, they are unlikely to overlap because these are all random stuff. So if you think about r times s here, that's the total dimension occupied by this colored part. You can choose delta and epsilon and things so small that rs, the product together, is much, much lower than d to the n. And therefore secure the fact that they don't overlap much, and therefore you can decode. So in short, I'm just proved by intimidation that this is both secure and correct. And I'm a little out of time, so I'll quickly run through the comments. So the point here is that the space they can encode is almost the same as the local dimension as d grows larger and larger, because d over log d is almost d in that case, and we take log of that thing to become the number of qubits. I haven't said anything about what happens when the threshold is 1. It's a silly threshold, it's hardly hiding anything. If one party can recover the state with the help of the other guys, what does it mean? It's actually a notion that has been discussed before by Top Run some years ago. It's a quantum well-over. In a sense, you encode the clean state among n parties. And with the help of the other n-1 guys, one party can recover the state. So one of them can download the data. So it's kind of fun to draw the connection. And in some sense, this is also like if we try to draw some connection to secret sharing. Secret sharing is a kind of error-coded code. And if we have special scheme for quantum data hiding that looks like secret sharing, then we don't need all the parties to participate. That will give rise to a class of quantum error cracking code that allow that requires only classical control. We'll want to decode. So this may this is opposite to quantum data hiding when we worry about LCC decoding. But in some sense, LCC decoding is really desirable for those who want to work on quantum computation. This is one thing that I'll try to explain. These hiding states have some funny properties that we actually learned from a very recent work. I'm drawing here. So we just look at one of these hiding states and consider a bipartite cut into N1 and N2 parties. Without loss, we can think N2 being bigger. So here I'm plotting some entanglement as a function of N1 and K. K is the threshold. The light blue one here, which is almost zero over this regime, and this rising part, is the only bar I know for the entanglement of this relation, provided that the additivity conjecture is true. Which means that a large part of this, under a big regime, this hiding state actually has very little distillable entanglement. And in this regime, it has some distillable entanglement that we have some upper bound on. What is interesting is that we also know about the entanglement formation of these states. The entanglement formation is independent of the threshold of the partition N1. It's independent of the threshold and it's dependent on N1. It cannot be bigger than N1 times log B. But basically, it's this flat cover here. And it joins the other bar along this line. The point is that in this regime here, the entanglement formation is much, much larger than the distillable entanglement. And so only two possibilities. One is that the additivity doesn't hold, and therefore the light blue upper bound does not hold. Or these states are highly irreversible. So this is a fun point to note. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, these states are not separable as we thought before. This scheme, let me remind you that it's impractical. We show that they exist, we don't know how to construct them, we don't know how to verify whether one is good or not. And also, it would be nice to have some explicit construction that has the same behavior, and I hope others, I think Joseph is working on it. So hopefully we know something about constructive schemes. More relation with superselection rules, that's why I'm talking about this result here. As Frank has shown, so here, let me remind one thing. We can apply these schemes in the presence of local superselection rules by encoding 0 as a 0 point and 1 as a 1-0. But what we want is new extra security feature coming directly from superselection rules. And I think a lot of work can be done along these directions. More general as a structure, that's not special. And finally, we have talked about the security condition as how distinguish two things are under strict LCC. What if they have a little entanglement? Is it stable when they have a little entanglement? This is something very worth thinking about. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much.
Quantum data hiding schemes and sound entanglement. So let me be more precise. In the original, the DLT scheme, uh-huh. The Werner states, were they separable or?
You notice that we have been proving something about PPQ. I suspect that we don't know. One of them is separable.
One of them.
The other one has entanglement formation one.
Okay. Now, if I remember correctly, you said that you optimized over all PPT operations, mm-hmm. not just all separable operations.
Right.
So if you added the PPT resource, that wouldn't help the parties break the scheme.
Precisely.
And then the Egling and Werner scheme, all the hiding states were separable.
Yes.
And there, I assume, the optimization was also done over PPT operations. Is it known whether PPT channel would break that scheme?
Actually, I think they even prove that the scheme is fairly robust against the presence of a little amount of entanglement. I can check that out for you. The true fact about the result is that the long paper has not appeared. Yeah.
So far, there's no reason to think that there is a connection. It's not as if all these data hiding schemes. It sounds like some of them just don't make use of entanglement in any way at all.
No.
Could you raise the point, this certain kind of conclusion, but could you have tell us on that, so how much amendment do we need to leave you open this secret? I guess another one, of course, just that they could deliver everything which
right.
Is
right. Right.
Do you have any results on that?
No, we haven't done any work on that. we're about to finish writing, so I'm not sure why we didn't have it. I suppose we're tired of that calculation. Okay, so a little sorry. The correctness is that I didn't show for long. We thought it was true for the past 8 months, and there are always some technicality that we have to fix, and for the past 8 months we have been fighting with this epsilon endeavor and all these probability estimates. I guess the comments that we haven't done it, most likely because we have been a little exhausted. hopefully it's not too difficult, and if you're interested in thinking about it, that would be nice.
Any more questions? No? Lunch, and that's here.
Yep.
The lunch is here at 12:45, so we have an hour. My client is not.